It's been 6 months since the start of the U.S. baby formula shortage, and shelves are still bare. Could this shortage have been avoided if officials at the Abbott baby formula plant just listened to the word of a whistleblower? Why did the original whistleblower's claim go ignored for so long? I'm John Kiriakou, and today we're discussing the baby formula shortage on The Whistleblowers. It's been 6 months, and still today, all eyes are on the Abbott baby formula plant in Sturgis, Michigan, after a whistleblower complaint to the FDA over safety concerns, including poor cleaning practices, falsified records, and more. This all comes after several babies drank Abbott formula and contracted a rare bacterial infection leading to their deaths. As a result, the plant was forced to shutter, contributing to a nationwide baby formula shortage. The Abbott facility is the largest formula factory in the United States, as well as one of the largest four-wheeler manufacturers in the country. The facility had previously shut down in February, driving a nationwide crisis of infant and specialty formulas, but had managed to reopen on June 4th. What you might not know about this story is that a whistleblower says that they were fired for raising safety concerns about formula coming from that plant. Now Abbott says it's conducting its own investigation into the matter. And despite moves from the U.S. to increase the supply, American families are still feeling the pain and the nationwide baby formula shortage. Parents and caregivers are still struggling to find supplies. Store shelves are emptied and completely cleaned out. Many are turning to hospitals to find specialty baby formulas. The Biden administration has been calling on other countries for help, though. In May, the president signed a $28 million bill to import foreign baby formulas from Germany and Australia, and for the Food and Drug Administration to loosen restrictions on what kinds of formula can be purchased through the federal food aid program for women and babies. So how much of this mess could have been avoided? We now know that Abbott and the FDA were alerted to a whistleblower complaint about the formula plant issue as far back as February 2021, which was first reported by the Wall Street Journal. The whistleblower was terminated in August 2020, and this person filed a discrimination complaint with Michigan OSHA shortly thereafter. The Abbott employee said the plant sanitary practices were not safe. He sent a 34-page report to the Food and Drug Administration saying that conditions at the plant were appalling and that they endangered public safety. But here's the problem. Nothing happened until two babies died. That led to Abbott shutting down the plant in February. The effect of that shutdown was enormous, as it turns out that 80% of the country's specialty formula is created by this Abbott plant. All of this and the ignoring of warnings from the whistleblower has led to this baby formula shortage. But it's not just babies who are in danger. Thousands of children across the country have such severe food allergies that they can only safely consume formula. Even though the whistleblower tried to alert the FDA of the issues at the plant, the allegations didn't make their way to the top of the government for 4 months in what was nothing short of a complete breakdown in the reporting system. Let's bring in Dr. Marion Massey, MD. She's the founder of the group Practicing Physicians of America. Welcome, Dr. Massey. First things first, though, before we get into the specifics of the Abbott whistleblower, can you explain why it is that women can't just breastfeed? We hear that a lot, but it's a complicated issue, isn't it? Why is baby formula so essential?
Well, I certainly hope that anyone that would ask the question, why can't women just breastfeed, have tried to breastfeed themselves? Because I will tell you, I thought it was the hardest part of first-time motherhood. I was fortunate enough to be successful, but I think there's so many reasons. There is low milk supply. Mm-hmm. There is the issue if a woman happened to have had surgery, she will not be able to breastfeed. There is the issue if a woman happens to be on any one of a number of medications. You know, it's much more important to me that a mom be happy and functional and feeding her child formula. That's much more important as a pediatrician than it must be breast milk. And, you know, some women suffer debilitating postpartum depression, even prepartum depression. And, you know, there's not great studies regarding mothers breastfeeding and being on some of these antidepressants. In addition, women may have medical problems, tuberculosis. You know, the world over, if you have active TB, you can't breastfeed. There's a question, if you have HIV, can you breastfeed? There is also the issue of what if the baby has something like phenylketonuria, which happens in approximately 1 to 10,000 to 1 to 15,000 infants. It's not the only metabolic issue that infants can be born with. And when the infant is screened in infancy, there's like sometimes hundreds that you're checking for. PKU is just one. Those babies can't drink breast milk.
We hear so much about supply chain. How can something like this happen in the United States? We're supposed to have the best regulated system in the world for producing things like baby formula. How can we find ourselves in a position where we actually risk babies dying because the plant in which their food is produced is unsanitary? How does that happen?
Sure. So, I mean, I'll divert a little and tell you, we have a supply chain problem in the United States in general. I mean, there's not only, for several decades, we have an ongoing list of drugs, medications, and solutions that are in shortage. In 2018, we had a terrible flu year. Way before COVID, we were out of saline, salt water,
wow.
Right? We've had shortages of chemotherapy. I have talked to oncologists around the country that are trying to decide which of their two sick patients, should it be the 22-year-old who has lymphoma, or should it be the 20-year-old that has testicular cancer? Which one is going to get this chemotherapy shortage? We've had shortages of injectable epinephrine, you know, EpiPens. 1 in 13 children suffer from, you know, life-threatening food allergies, but sometimes you can't get the EpiPen. I mean, what a shock. Why do we have all these shortages? It's clear that our supply chain is broken. I'm going to call your attention to another Practicing Physician of America, Dr. Nicole Johnson and I, and we wrote an article for MedPage a couple of weeks ago, very grateful to the editors of MedPage that they published it, just discussing that there are middlemen in the supply chain that are sort of mucking up the joint. And, you know, astonishingly, these middlemen have the legal right to collect kickbacks from the manufacturers. I mean, how does that happen, right? And so what happens is you end up with some preferred manufacturers in each area. So like in the baby formula arena, you might end up with only, well, we have only three major manufacturers. You have Abbott, you have Nestle, and you have Mead Johnson. And we can talk about the way that that happened for them, but you have the same thing happening for other medications.
To your point about the supply chain shortages, you work with families every single day. You work with babies, with infants. I could imagine that it's impacted your work and your patients. Can you just talk to us about how this shortage has impacted these families and share your own experience with this crisis that we're all still dealing with?
Yes. What I'd like to do actually is even share a broader experience, because Practicing Physicians of America has thousands of physicians that participate, and they tell their stories as well. So, I mean, there's parents that are like spending the first weeks of their infants' lives driving around looking for formula, you know, driving out of state, you know, calling up friends, begging, do you have any formula left over from your child? There's, you know, these parents are like up at night worrying. You know, I meet parents that are, you know, I hate to say it, but like, you know, I feel like they're practically looking for the black market of infant formula, you know? So they're taking a lot of time. They're expending a lot of worry. And, you know, as a pediatrician, I will say, I think that you're bonding with your baby. When that's impacted, it's just not good for anyone's mental health, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel that these parents have that going on. It's really horrifying to have a mom that is so mentally exhausted from the concern that they have over making sure that their infant is nourished, mm-hmm. you know, especially the ones that cannot breastfeed. And it was already hard enough to be a mom.
I can only imagine the devastation that these families are going through. I can't even imagine, to tell you the truth. To be honest with you, it's heart-wrenching, but the news was first reported by the Wall Street Journal, which also said the whistleblower was terminated in August of 2020 and filed a discrimination complaint with Michigan OSHA shortly after that. One of the things that I learned from my own attorneys when I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program was that the whistleblower's motivation is actually irrelevant so long as a person exposes waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety. That's actually the definition of whistleblowing. If that's the case, he or she is a whistleblower. I guess the most fundamental question then is, was the whistleblower's complaint justified? And if it was, Dr. Massey, what is being done to rectify the issues that the whistleblower raised? We know that the plant, for example, reopened briefly and then closed again.
Yeah, goodness. I guess one would have to ask Abbott, you know, truly, like, what did you do to literally clean up your act? Because there was question of, like, you know, I believe, wasn't there like dirty buckets or something like that left out there? Yeah. It's not a good look that they would terminate someone. And then the fact that, like, the whistleblower complaint gets made, that there's such a delay in looking into this looks really bad.
We do know that Abbott is conducting an investigation on their part, and we do know that they're working cooperatively with the FDA. But this whole situation is unfortunate because it seems that the whistleblower's claims had gone ignored for so long, and these babies' lives could have been saved. To our viewers, it is important for you to know that timeline is important when it comes to a whistleblower's complaint. Dr. Massey, what are the dangers of letting 6 months pass before the public knows that there's a problem? Can you comment on that?
Of course. I mean, like, you know, do you want your baby drinking potentially dirty formula? I mean, let's look back into history. In 2008, there was a, you can look it up, there was a scandal with melamine, which causes kidney damage in children, and it was found in formula manufactured in China. I believe 52,000 children around the world were hospitalized. Now, actually, if you look at the Abbott problem when the two children died, tragedy, total tragedy. But I think what they discovered is that the bacteria that killed those children was not found in the cans of formula, in the Abbott formula. It must have been from another source. The bigger, you know, and I don't mean to discount those deaths. Those deaths are horrible and tragic. You know, someone needs to get to the bottom of where that bacteria came from. It didn't come from Abbott, but the bigger problem is tweet, someone blows a whistle about dirty conditions in the plant where 40% of the formula in the United States is manufactured, and it takes months to, like, start investigating. And then when they do investigate, like, the lines that were in question, they could have shut down just several lines. They didn't have to shut down the whole plant. I mean, they could have made sure that they got to the portions of the plant that are manufacturing the formula for the children that we talked about at the beginning, the children that can't drink anything else.
As for the federal response, when President Biden was asked if this administration was aware of the problem, the president told reporters, no, they weren't aware of the problem. However, Biden's own transportation secretary just had not one child, but twins. Back in November, Pete Buttigieg was the perfect example of why some people have to depend on baby formula. How is it possible that this administration was unaware of the formula shortage?
You bring up a really good point. I mean, you know, that Secretary Buttigieg and his husband, I mean, neither of them can breastfeed. And, you know, there's many wonderful families like him. And so it just seems like, shouldn't people be communicating more? Maybe some of this is just the general breakdown of, like, us not being together with COVID and not hearing each other's stories. But, you know, heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, you asked about the children who have the, you know, the severe allergies and what they're going through and, you know, trying to find formula. Wow, like, what a stressor on those families in the midst of already dealing with, like, a post-pandemic world. In children that might have secondary health problems who are more concerned about the COVID pandemic to begin with. So, I mean, I feel like families have dealt with stress on top of stress on top of stress. And I found it very, yeah. And it was very sad because sometimes, like, I've seen people, like, say things like within the own administration, well, just ask your pediatrician, you know, if you can't get formula.
Dr. Massey, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation and talk about how the desperation of baby formula has made parents a target for thieves trying to exploit that distrust and what you should do. We'll be right back.
Only 41% of U.S. adults have enough savings to cover a $1,000 emergency.
We have record numbers of Americans who are on the verge of having their cars repossessed.
More than 137 million Americans are facing financial hardship because of medical debt.
In America, we do have a welfare system in place to help people who are struggling financially, but it's a conditional system. You have to prove to the government that you truly need help.
The simplest way that I can explain a basic income is that it's like Social Security for the rest of us. A basic income would be a monthly payment that would go to everyone.
That's $1,000 a month, no strings attached. I can use it however I would like. That means, I don't know, I just won't go crazy.
The reason that I am a fan of guaranteed income, because it is this idea that everybody is deserving just by virtue of your being here.
The elections are almost completely removed from the day-to-day lives of the American people. And so the American people, I believe, if provided good information and left to their own devices, would come to far more reasonable, informed conclusions than they're coming to about world events right now.
Children at St. Anne's Residential School suffered nightmarish levels of abuse, torture, and child rape, and yet the Office of the Attorney General suppressed thousands of pages of police evidence that identified those perpetrators.
In the school, I was electrocuted twice. I was only 7 years old. It was too high for me, so somebody put me in the chair. Father Lavoie used to run over here after he abused somebody and run here and seek absolution and whip himself.
Some of them are my relatives that didn't make it, drinking themselves to death, overdoses.
But you know what it made me? It made me the person I am today, because I'm a fighter. I don't give up with anything.
Investigations were too often handled differently because the deceased was indigenous.
So many of the worst criminals got away. The bishops got away. The ones who'd done most of the damage never got charged.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're continuing our discussion on the baby formula shortage in America and how we got there. We're with Dr. Marianne Massey. She's the founder of the group Practicing Physicians of America. Dr. Massey, we've heard stories from parents so desperate to feed their babies that they're watering down formula to make it last longer. Isn't this dangerous?
Oh, yes. Please, please, please do not water down that formula. You know, I think back to my training in Chicago at Robert Lurie Children's Hospital. We would have, especially in the summer, routinely, we would have children that would come in. The mothers had been watering down formula to save pennies back then. There was no shortage. And what happens is the baby's sodium, the salt in the baby's bloodstream, plummets, goes down. And when the sodium plummets to a dangerous level, the baby will present with a seizure. And you can actually, in really severe cases, do some damage to your brain. For your baby's brain. I mean, it's like heartbreaking when you see that happen. So a seizing infant or newborn that comes in, these little babies, like children under the age of 6 months especially, are not able to tolerate very highly watered down formulas. This is why you have to make it the appropriate way.
We saw an old recipe for baby formula that has been circulating on social media for parents to make their own formula using evaporated milk and corn syrup. What's your advice on those who are so desperate that they have to try to make homemade formulas that others used years ago? I mean, we also used to have lead paint, and we also used to not wear seat belts. And studies have convinced us that this was just a dumb thing to do.
I cannot recommend using the Karo syrup and the evaporated milk. I just can't do it. I mean, what's in the Karo syrup? Is it going to be sterile enough? You know, could you get bacterial growth in there? It's just a problem. I guess what I would say is let's look for a better solution. So what if we, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics and Pediatricians say either formula or breast milk until age one, and then you can switch over to cow's milk, which is in abundance, right? And some kids, of course, cannot drink cow's milk. But what if you said you got your baby to like 11 and a half months or even 11 months, and then you did a little cow's milk? I mean, we might be able to have some people that were able to save formula and get it to a family that really needed it, that couldn't have that cow's milk, correct? You could go back to families that might be like at the end of their time of their child being on formula, and they might have an extra can left over. You know, we should be like leaning on each other, like in those cases. Or, you know, the other thing too that I would say is, and this I don't ever mean to shame people into, oh, only breastfeeding. But I do think that we need to think as a culture. In Europe, breastfeeding is much more common and done longer. So what could we do in our workplaces to encourage breastfeeding? You know, because sometimes people just stop because it's too hard to go and pump. You know, I work with nurses now that like leave and they say, oh, I have to go pump. And I don't care how busy it is. I'm like, yes, go pump.
Right.
Keep that breast supply coming. And, you know, there's other women that have an excess supply that are now donating their breast milk to, you know, breast milk banks. And then this milk gets tested and sterilized and then other mothers are using it. Whatever we can do to try to reserve supplies of breast milk for others.
To your point about alternatives to breast milk, given the circumstances that parents are dealt, in some cases, this has become a life or death situation. What can parents do to prevent being scammed by people online who want to take advantage of the situation?
You know, what the government really needs to do, they all need to get together and sit in a room and have a big kumbaya moment and ask themselves, like, how did we get to this point with only the three manufacturers, like you point out, you know, Abbott, Mead Johnson, and Nestle? And if you look at who, like, the formula, how does it get to people? Well, the WIC program, Women's, Infants, and Children, supplies 50% of the formula in America. The WIC program works with states, and these states, there's some type of mechanism that happens in the formula industry that seems very opaque, very shrouded. The companies are offered rebates. We see the same thing happening in the drug world, right? Like I told you, like they can take legalized kickbacks, you know, certain industries. It seems as though these companies are able to offer some type of rebate to become the manufacturer for a certain state. And then we get funneled down and winnowed into three companies making it for 50%. The other large repository of formula historically has been the hospitals. Now they're giving it out less than they used to be. But like, I mean, when I was my oldest is 23. When I was, you know, giving birth, they were handing out a bag of formula. And of course it was like the standard, like whatever hospital, you know, whatever they were using for that particular hospital. Hospitals have a mechanism of getting supplies into the hospitals. It's through a group purchasing organization, and this industry is also concentrated. There are major group purchasing organizations. Two of the big ones are called Premier and Vizient. Mm-hmm. Vizient was just written about in the Matt Stoller is a great whistleblower, and he works with the American Economic Liberties Foundation, I believe. Mm-hmm. But he wrote a great article about Vizient. If you look on the website of Vizient, you will find that their pediatric supplier of the year is Abbott. Now, Vizient doesn't manufacture anything. They don't even move the formula or any of the other supplies for hospitals around. They simply write the contracts and they can collect kickbacks from any manufacturer to get their product into the hospital. So if their supplier of the year is Abbott, what I would be guessing is that somehow Abbott has paid Vizient so that for all the Vizient hospitals around the country, and I think there's about 3,000 hospitals that use Vizient for their group purchasing organization. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that Abbott might be paying Vizient a big kickback. And right. It actually needs to be the HHSOIG, the Office of Inspector General at Health and Human Services, can simply ask to see the kickback contracts. They should be doing that. They call them rebate contracts, but we have to stop it. You know, they're not really rebates, they're kickbacks. They have an exemption from the anti-kickback statute. So, you know, call them kickbacks. And HHSOIG, whoever you are right now, get on the ball, man. Get going, you know, like to use the phrase. Come on, man, get out there and ask for those kickback. And while you're kickback contracts, and while you're at it, ask for the kickback contracts for all the other drugs that are in shortage and that have been in shortage. And, you know, for manufacturers that used to manufacture and are no longer there, because, you know, word on the street is that the amount that companies are paying for all kinds of drugs, probably for all kinds of hospital supplies, the amount of the kickback that they're paying, I bet is going up. Mm-hmm. It's a really seedy business, you know, to tell you the truth. It's really seedy.
Dr. Marian Massey, founder of Practicing Physicians for America, thank you for joining us and helping us to understand this crisis better. That's all we have for you today. I'm John Kiriakou, and I'll see you next time on The Whistleblowers.